Hi there, everybody. My name's Rob Birdwell.
And I'm Bob Madar.
And this is
The Petri Dish.
We're coming to you from Corvallis, Oregon.
A fine little city in western Oregon. Lovely place. And we're going to be talking about all kinds of things over our time together. And the reason we chose the name Petri Dish for the name of our, for the title of our broadcast, or our podcast, yeah, I'm screwing it up, but what the hell. The reason we chose the Petri Dish was because the Petri Dish is a place where you can culture all kinds of things. And what we're going to culture here in our Petri Dish is going to be the intersection between the arts and the sciences. Because both bring us to a very, very fundamental appreciation of beauty. And we really want to put those two pieces together.
The one thing Bob and I have in common, we have many things in common, but we're both musicians. Bob has an extensive science background. Mine is not so extensive, but we both appreciate music and art and the wonders of the world. And science is getting the perspective from a pro like Bob, who has taught science and has the knowledge of it. I think it'll be an interesting discussion. Some of not my ignorance, but you know, I'm just a musician, right? But
just a musician, please. Well, the other thing about Rob, I got to say, is that if I have some of the science expertise, he has the musical expertise. I'm a musician and play, but Rob really knows the business. So between the two of us, we have somebody that's got a pretty good basis in science and a moderate understanding of music. We have somebody that has a very deep basis in music and a moderate understanding of science. So I think it'll be a very interesting dialogue.
So we come together, these two guys, into the Petri Dish to present for you our first maiden voyage episode. This week's topic is rain.
Rain, which is a very good topic for Western Oregon.
Well, we live in the Northwest. We do get a lot of rain. It's been cold this particular winter, and we've had our share of rain, but it's also been dry. But we need the rain here.
We've got to have it. Can't live without it. And as an old Oregonian, I've been here for 30-some-odd years. If it doesn't rain, I'm really sad. So right at the moment, people are going, it's beautiful, it's sunny, and I'm going, it's not raining. So rain.
Yeah. So we use that as our kind of our catalyst, our springboard. So we'll explore it and see where it goes. We hope you enjoy it. And again, this is Rob Birdwell.
Bob Madar.
And this is
The Petri Dish.
Well, my goodness gracious, it's really interesting at this time of year. This is the monsoon season in Western Oregon.
So we really have a monsoon season?
Well, it's not really. I mean, I guess
it sounds so exotic.
It does sound kind of exotic. It kind of makes us think
like monsoon season in Corvallis.
Unfortunately, we don't get the warm weather to go with it. But yeah, it's just rainy. It rains here a lot in the wintertime, and then in the summertime, we don't have a lot of rain. We have kind of a summertime drought, so right now, the rains are just starting to crank up, and we should have cloudy, rainy weather for the next 4 or 5 months. And so anyway, yeah, it's rain, man. Rain.
So I have a little side story. Where I work, there was an intern just from California. And I don't know, do you remember that huge rain we had? I mean, it was just an uncommonly, downpour.
It was like
a Texas style
rain.
That was a Texas style rain.
That's exactly what it was.
She's this young intern working, and we're all looking out the window at this rain, and she kind of looks at us and says, "Is it always this way here?" And we assured her it wasn't, but she's no longer with the company.
It can get to you. I remember a friend who, she said, "I have to leave." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "I need sun. I can't stand this weather like this. I just can't stand the weather." I have to have sun. So she took off and went someplace where she had sun in the wintertime. Myself, I like this cloudy weather. I like it cool. I like it wet. And I like the rain. So one of the reasons to live in Oregon, I suppose. It's interesting to think about the rain. I used to teach, and at this time of year, this is when I would start to teach the water cycle. And we're all familiar, I think, with the water cycle, and the rain falls from the sky, and it gets in the streams, and it goes to the ocean, and it evaporates, and it goes back up to the clouds, and around it goes. And so that was the way I used to teach. And one of the things I used to say to my students was, you know, you guys realize that right now, when you drink water, the chances are fairly good that you're drinking dinosaur urine. And then there would be this, you know, and everybody go, I can't stand it. Oh, that's terrible. And then I would, you know, talk about how water is ancient and it's been around for a long time. And the funny thing is just a little while ago, I kind of Googled it and I went to a water resources site online, and they started talking about the water cycle. And as anything else in life, that you think it's very simple and straightforward, and turns out it's not. It's much more complex.
Yeah.
And so I was really surprised about that, and then kind of, you know, dug a little deeper, and then it all made sense. So are we drinking dinosaur piss? maybe yes, maybe no. It's not quite so simple.
Well, that's probably better than a lot of things we could be drinking, I suppose.
Absolutely. 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 Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting. There's an enormous cycle and a complexity to it. But one of the ways to think about it that I think about it is sort of this idea that water exists in the form that we drink it because of all kinds of sort of strange happenings that we may not see or understand. But all of those things coming together result in us having a glass of fresh water or a cup of coffee. And sometimes that, to me, is the beauty of the world that we live in and the complexity of it. And so I think it's interesting to use that water cycle as a metaphor for a lot of other things. And one of the things I think is really interesting is that there is the water cycle. So clouds are forming, it's raining, rain's falling on the land right now. But the other thing that happens, too, is that we, when we metabolize the food that we eat, we give off water vapor. When plants make carbohydrates in photosynthesis, they break water into hydrogen and oxygen and combine it with carbon to make carbohydrates and harvest the energy of the sun. We then eat those carbohydrates and get the energy from those carbohydrates and release water. So water is intimately involved in all kinds of reactions and exchanges and life and everything else on the surface of our planet. So I just find that to be really fascinating. So you actually have this idea of all kinds of influences and things coming together to make this cup of water that we hold in our hand that are global in nature, and yet it's manifest in a cup of water that we're going to have a drink out of.
Yeah. Here in the Northwest, it seems like we tend to take for granted the volume of water that we have. And at the same time, it seems like people take great care to set up these watersheds. We don't have the same sort of problems that they do in, say, Los Angeles or Vegas, where they literally have to come up with aqueducts to get the water in.
Interesting to think about, you know, that idea, you know, so here I have this water cycle and this water is totally integrated in everything we do and everything we know and everything we learn. And I mean, it's just part of us completely. And then when you step back from a more macro view, then there's these huge projects of moving water from one place to another. So that, you know, that you know, Los Angeles has an adequate water supply, so Phoenix has an adequate water supply. And then there are treaties around water, you know. So these nations will say, for example, the Colorado River, there are treaties regulating how much water gets taken out of that river and who takes it and where does it go and who ends up with it. And all of this stuff is basically just, it's really interesting to think about, you know, it's all based around this H2O, this absolutely important molecule that's important for our lives and everything else. And then you step back from a macro view and you've got just this incredible amount of, you know, construction and pumping. And I mean, I think about the water on the surface of the planet. Jeez, I mean, we're pulling it out of aquifers, you know? I mean, we're pumping it, we're shipping it, we're doing all this other stuff with it because it's absolutely crucial and central. And yet at the same token, it's intimately involved and woven into the warp and weft of the living system that's on the surface of the earth. And then for us here in Oregon right now, what is it? It's rain.
Rain,
clouds.
Yeah. It could be pretty gray here. You know, I've lived in sunny environments, but I was born, or not born, but raised here in the Pacific Northwest, and I like these gray days, you know, those days when the clouds are just kind of threatening rain, but it doesn't really interfere with your event or your thing. And then eventually the rain comes, and we just, we got to put on our rain gear and get on with it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, you can spot a true Oregonian. About 7 years ago or so, we had a very dry fall. And I was in local market, and it had clouded up, and it was looking like it was going to rain. And it had been really dry, and everybody was feeling the effects of just no rain. It had clouded up, and I remember coming out of the store, and just as it started raining, you could watch the people. I just stopped and stood underneath a little awning and kind of watched people come out of the store for about 10 minutes. And as you saw them come out, you could really spot the people that were Oregonians, because they'd walk out and they'd just look up and go, "Oh, it's raining." And they were happy because, you know, we're used to the rain and we like the rain. And so, yeah, you can, when it's not raining, it's no fun.
Well, we see the, you know, June will come around, everything's all green. July here is, things are still green. You might want to consider watering your lawn if you have a lawn, or certainly got to water your garden. Come late July, August, the inconceivable starts happening, that the lawn and the grasses turn, this kind of wheat color. And, you know, it was hard to imagine that transformation could have ever happened. You know, when you think back to that first lawn mowing of May or whenever it was, you know, it's like when the grass was 3 feet high and you thought, this stuff is relentless. And then come August, it's just this stub of wheat-colored dried weed, you know.
Exactly.
Like, we didn't get any rain, you know, for 6-8 weeks.
Right.
Very little.
Dried out. And it's, you know, the funny thing is, my son-in-law is a wildland firefighter, and so he works for the Forest Service, and in the summer times he's basically on fires all over the western United States. And one of the things that's funny is that they never have fires in the Sayers Law, which is the forest that's here. It's in the Coast Range, just really close to Corvallis, where we live. And the Sayers Law basically almost never has a fire. So they don't worry about fires in the Sayers Law because it's too wet. Just almost never burns, which is kind of funny. Whereas you get, you know, in the eastern Oregon or a lot of other forests in southern Oregon or then California or the rest of the Mountain West, summertime's fire season, and you can expect to have, you know, fairly hot fires. But so far, Sayers Law doesn't burn very much at all, so they're almost always farmed out to other forests in the summertime. Oh, give me some rain where the water will fall and it causes the flowers to grow. I love the rain, oh yes I do, and I'm glad that Western Oregon's my home.
Rain, rain, go away. Come again some other day.
Well, the rain be falling from the sky. It makes everything not so dry. I like to walk into cloudy weather and feel that rain dropping on my feather. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so we're at this crossroads where we're talking about music, art, science. We're focusing on rain, water. What's it all mean? Where are we going with this, Bob?
So the real goal for me in this project, I think more than anything else, is just to sort of convey the emotional beauty, the beauty of science and scientific ideas and scientific analysis. Oftentimes people, I think, have a tendency to look at science as sort of some sort of nuts and bolts kind of thing that, you know, people do to discover information about the planet so we can engineer better things. But really what it is to me is just this fundamental expression of human curiosity and human creativity. And then the ideas that come out of it sometimes are so striking that they're just awe-inspiring and just knock your socks off. And so one of the things, this metaphor of using rain as a way of kind of beginning this discussion, is that, you know, when I taught, you know, I taught the water cycle. And the idea was that, you know, in the water cycle, it's kind of what we've all learned in school. You know, rain falls on the land, you know, the rain then can go, or it may fall as rain, it may fall as snow, but it ends up on the surface of the planet. Then it'll either end up in a stream or it'll end up in groundwater, and then gradually it all flows back to the ocean, and then it's kind of taken up by the clouds, and then the cycle repeats itself. So you get this nice, lovely cycle, and that is largely accurate, that there is a cycle, but it turns out that there is a good deal more complexity to it than just sort of the rain falling on the land, flowing back in the ocean, getting evaporated back up in this continual cycle. So what you end up with is interacting cycles. You've got these other cycles that are happening on the surface of the planet that are intimately involved in the rain cycle. And that, to me, is just fascinating. So another big cycle that happens on the planet, we see it every day, is sort of this idea of photosynthesis, which are our buddies, the green plants. And by the way, for anybody out there who's listening to this, maybe the next time you see a green plant, you might take your hat off to them, because those buggers are doing good stuff for us. So let's just break this down just briefly for a moment. What happens? Well, plants are probably the ultimate biochemists on the surface of this planet. There's nobody better at biochemistry than plants. And one of the things that they do all the time is they take the radiant energy from the sun and they use that to split a water molecule. And then that produces some hydrogen and some oxygen. They release the oxygen, and they take that hydrogen and they clip it onto a carbon dioxide molecule at the atomic level. So these guys are engineering at the atomic level. We can't do that yet at all. I mean, we may think we're pretty smart, but we're not as smart as they are. And so they take that hydrogen, energized hydrogen, and they clip that onto a carbon dioxide molecule. And they build these long chains. And what are those guys? They're carbohydrates. And those are the things we eat for energy. Plants produce the food molecules that we need in order to harvest this energy from the sun. So we get these carbohydrates, which are basically carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. So remember, CO2 and water. Carbon, oxygen, hydrogen. So that's basically what we do. We take those carbohydrates, we eat them, we metabolize them, and then what we harvest from that is the energy that was the energy of the sun that the plants captured, and we then release. And what do we release? We breathe out. We breathe out carbon dioxide, and we breathe out water vapor. So the water that's in the water cycle, some of it stays in this grand cycle that we describe. You know, rain falls on land, streams, groundwater ends up back in the ocean, comes back around. But some of that water goes into this grand cycle of photosynthesis, which basically is, again, plants forming carbohydrates, taking in water vapor, carbon dioxide, releasing oxygen. We then inhale that oxygen that the plants have just released, metabolize the metabolize the carbohydrates, and re-release carbon dioxide and water. So some of the water that falls on the land doesn't end up back in the ocean. It ends up in a plant until we eat the plant, and then that water goes back into the cycle. So when I told my students that they are drinking dinosaur piss when they drink fresh water, they could be drinking dinosaur piss when they drink fresh water because all this water is ancient, I was a little bit incorrect, because there's this other cycle, the photosynthetic cycle, that is then taking water and using it to capture radiant energy from the sun and power the entire ecosystem. So for me, when I look at that, when I think about that, it just knocks my socks off. What an amazing, incredible cycle. And because all of this stuff is just churning away, you know, water's going up, coming down, it's going into photosynthesis, it's getting into carbohydrates, I eat them, I release it, blah, blah, blah. I am intimately connected to these enormous cycles on the surface of the planet. And if it wasn't for those cycles, there'd be no me. That just blows me away.
It's pretty humbling. As a person who's gone back to college as an older than average student in recent years, I took botany, I took oceanography, and I took some other science courses. And I have to say, no matter where you are in your life, the study of these cycles, of just the basic things, they're really humbling. I almost feel like as a 17, 18, 19 year old student of these things years ago, I maybe wasn't capable of quite appreciating, you know, these things in their entirety. Because, you know, we're busy doing our things, eating our food, going to gigs, doing things. And mm-hmm. But as an adult, you maybe start to reflect a little bit and look at the world a little differently, and you see the positive and negative things going on in the world, mm-hmm. and you start to think, wait a minute,
exactly.
what is this plant doing? You know, we study the kind of the blood flow through a worm, you know, tracking its vitals as it got a little caffeine. Just one little ingredient like that was affecting the worm, and it's like you think, well, shucks, what else is going on? You know, positive, negative, chemicals, other things, random things that we don't always see or have control of. That's great stuff, Bob. When you were talking, I was thinking, you know, we're searching for, you know, life and trying to expand science, and we're going beyond our planet to other areas of our solar system, mm-hmm. and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so fascinating that, I don't know where I saw it, but a guy on a science program grabbed a piece of soil and he said, what I have in my hand here, for all we know, has more life in it than anything we know of right now. I don't know if that's true, but it does beg the question, look at how much we have right here on your tennis shoe right now. You have life crawling on you, things going on. It's kind of spooky in a way, but it's kind of exciting too.
Oh, it's just, yeah, to me it's just this incredible, complex, interacting symphony. And that's one of the reasons why I think music is such a good metaphor and a good tool for sort of conveying the emotion that you experience when you contemplate sort of the incredible complexity of the world around us. You know, because there's all kinds of, you know, things in music that in some ways are congruent with or representative of or an example of the kinds of things that happen in living systems. One of the things I think is really interesting in playing music is that you're always subject, you're always open to how can I say it, subtle impacts or subtle interventions or subtle influences. There's the word. That took me a long time. The older I get, the harder I find
that
word.
I'm no help with that.
No, I'm brain dead. Anyway, but these influences, you know, somebody might, you know, give you a little slight inflection on a rhythmic feel, and you pick that up and amplify it and send it back, and somebody else picks it up and goes, whoa, dog, yeah, and they amplify it and they send it back, and then all of a sudden the whole thing is transformed and moving in a new direction. And in some ways I think that's a really good metaphor for the conditional kinds of things that happen on our planet. in living systems is, you know, a little wrinkle comes in here and the whole thing goes, whoa, yeah, and then it magnifies it and sends it back, and then, whoa, yeah, and pretty soon the whole system is moving in a different direction. So I just think that it's just such a fascinating thing, but it's so cool the way these systems and these cycles interact with each other. So again, you know, for me, you know, just thinking about the water cycle, and I, you know, I thought I had it down. And it turns out, no, he didn't. And there's these other subtle cycles that are coming into the play that then ramify sort of this relationship into all aspects of our ecosystem. I mean, we're as much controlled by that and influenced by it as a bacteria in the soil is. And I just think that just fascinates the heck out of me.
Awesome. Hey, at this point, I would suggest we do a little musical interaction.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Well, there you have it. There's our episode, Bob.
There's our episode. We might even say a little water music.
A little water music. This has been fun, just to open up this dialogue and have this outlet, learning how to put it all together. It's an amazing process.
It really is. And again, I think it's just, you know, the beauty of the arts and the beauty of science and the beauty of the insights from both of them, when they come together, is quite profound for me. And hopefully we'll be, no hopefullys, we will share this with all of you. And,
yeah.
More fun than a barrel of monkeys for us.
And we're looking forward to the next episode, which we'll find out what that is when it comes. But for this, signing out, I'm Rob Birdwell.
I'm Bob Madar.
And this is
The Petri Dish.